Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at School Sucks Show. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
This is Brett. Today is Friday. Happy Valentine's Day for reals this time. I love that you are listening to this right now. Thank you for taking extra time this week to check this out. New feature that I just launched for February. I produce lots of extra content for the people who support this show, and I am heartbroken. Ooh, heartbroken. So few people compared to the entire podcast audience get to hear a lot of this great material. So I thought I would snip out little previews and put them up in the podcast feed. That's what's happening. Very good reception last week to the Picture of the Month Club on American Psycho. So I'm going to keep doing this. It's Free Bonus Friday. That needs a better name, I think. I was actually going to call this Free Gold Friday, but let's get a grip, huh? This excerpt comes from a series that we have been doing since the middle of 2019. It is called In Pursuit of Utopia. These conversations are led by 25-year-old School Sucks listener and community member Danny McCarthy. He is writing a book on this subject. You can learn more about his work at his website, ageofutopia.info. We were joined for the first time by another relatively regular School Sucks collaborator, Kevin Cole. And I've worked with Kevin a lot. Most of it has been supporter-only content. Kevin, Richard Grove, and I used to do an on-again, off-again series called The Deep End. Those are available in our archives. Kevin is a superb historical researcher, and he is really, really skilled at laying out the facts in a very, very high level of detail. But he can also, when prompted, just unload in the most beautiful ways, and that is a lot of what you're going to hear in this 25, 26-minute clip coming up today. This is a complete tangent away from what we were talking about in this show. I said earlier in the week that when we get to this episode on the Utopian Community of New Harmony, a lot of people who'd been following along with In Pursuit of Utopia over the last half year would understand why I thought this project was a worthwhile undertaking. This show is a kind of culmination, even though there's still plenty for us to do in the future. Our whole conversation ran almost 3 hours. I'm in the process of editing it down closer to 2, and the final version of this show will be posted to the AV Club, Patreon, and Subscribestar this weekend, either tomorrow or Sunday. I promise I am still putting the finishing touches on it. In this clip, we are talking about the utility of understanding these kinds of projects throughout history, but also some of the challenges that we have faced when it comes to things like messaging and ideology. What you're going to hear might upset you, but I thought it was useful, at least for me, as a kind of meta-analysis of some of the content that you heard earlier this week, my conversations with Pete Quinones and Dave Smith. And even though at the beginning of the week I promised like school history stories at 3 progressive depths, I thought this segment was actually more useful. I love this entire conversation, but this was one of my favorite parts. Kevin gets to rant, I get to rant, and I think Danny just brings it home in the end in a really spectacular way. By the way, Kevin was one of the presenters at the SSP Oniversity Virtual Summit, and in his presentation, he was thorough. Kevin appears in session 2, which is called How to Gather the Best Evidence and Information. He lays out his whole research methodology. Other presenters that day, Professor CJ from Dangerous History, Jay Dyer from Jay's Analysis, and Richard Grove from Tragedy and Hope. Now, as you know, we are also encoring the Ideas into Action Summit next month. And there's a way that you can attend that encore and have it now and help School Sucks and help Kevin Cole if you're a fan. So I already mentioned his website is Unity of the Polis. Go check out his work there. But if you want to register for the Encore, get access to all of the content immediately. It will come to you in an email with passwords to access everything. Please go to ssponiversity.com. You can just spell that university / ideas into action. You can support Kevin by registering using the coupon code UNITY, that is UNITY, or as Queen Latifah put it one time, bear with me, UNITY. I have a mixer. It's just an echo effect. You gotta let them know you're not a bitch or a hoe. Whoa, it's Friday. But Kevin's coupon code is just UNITY, not the rest of that. It's a good guideline to keep coupon codes nice and short. One word. No swears. UNITY. Use it. Save 30%. So anyway, that's it. I hope you enjoy this clip. Again, about how this exploration can be useful, but also some of the challenges we've had in messaging and in our work in general. And again, Danny proves himself to be a great teacher in the end of this clip. All right, here it is. I hope you enjoy it. When it cuts, there'll be information about how you can access this entire conversation. I hope you have a great weekend. I will be back on Monday with part one of my conversation with the honest teacher. Until then, take care.
Conspiracy theorists, we know who we're talking about when I say conspiracy theorists. They paint this picture of powerlessness. You know, the powers that be are so immensely powerful. And it's been the same group of people ruling the world for 6,000 years. It's like, okay, well, I guess we're fucked. You know, yeah. Okay, that's it then. But when we say like, no, this is a utopian vision, it kind of gives us power to criticize it and also recognize that every time a gigantic totalitarian central system or even a small microcosmic one like New Harmony was, pretty much every time it's set up, it fails. And so we can see that and say, okay, well, whatever one happens to come up next that people fall in love with, we can be like, no. Like, this is a ridiculous utopian scheme. It's been done before. I don't know. I think ultimately it can remind us, as long as we keep talking about it, we as individuals have the power and the rhetorical ability and the logical ability to contest these utopian schemes as they arise. And it's totalitarianism that is the ultimate form of utopianism. And as we're going to see here in New Harmony, while Owen seemed to be a benevolent guy, the system was very totalitarian. It was very authoritarian. And there were too many rules. It was too rigid. And Owen's assumption that he had figured out the proper way to act ultimately wound up being the downfall. And I see that as being a beautiful, almost caricature of what totalitarianism is. There's one way to be, and we figured it out, and, well, people aren't like that.
So to what you just said and something that Kevin mentioned earlier, I take a libertarian lens to these things very much. At this point, it seems almost unavoidable. And when you hear about an attempt to do a unification of thought and deed, you're like, oh, well, that's step one. Step two is totalitarianism. Right. And I'm kind of thinking, and it's okay if this invites another tangent, even though I haven't even thought about how to form this thought into words yet, but I am already in the middle of this sentence, so I'm going to keep going. I'm thinking about doing two interviews, one a week ago today and one last Wednesday, both on libertarian shows. And I'm tasked with trying to help libertarians who are at this point immersed in politics or social issues, or their number one area of investigation has been economics, to understand that if they want to live in a freer world, right? I mean, that's like even just individual liberty. I think you can pull it that out of an ideology. Like, seeking more autonomy in one's own life is, for me, a very desirable goal. And it doesn't necessarily have to be attached to a political philosophy. Finding it in your work, finding it in your relationships, finding it in your finances, finding it in your health. If you abstract that, that's almost universally desirable, with very, very few exceptions. So, you know, I'm on these libertarian shows, just to zoom back in, and I'm trying to show both of these large audiences in a way that's engaging and maybe perhaps a little bit provocative, that this education thing is an issue that more people need to be paying attention to. Now, that has a self-serving purpose in, like, listen to my show and think I'm important. What I do is important. But also, I see this as one of the most overlooked issues in the pursuit of individual liberty, right? Or in political liberty. And the costs to political liberty through this system over the last 170 years, I would say, have been pretty significant. So I, on the one hand, want to be cautious in all the ways that we're talking about. But on the other hand, I want to make an impression. And then I'm worried, as I'm listening to especially what Kevin said, that that becomes the record of the thing, right? Yeah, I was just talking to Chris McMillan on his show, and I said, you know, when I was a teacher, I was shitty because I came out of college, I was a progressive, I was really influenced by people like Zinn, and I was sensationalizing in a desperate effort to build these just completely indifferent teenagers' interest in the subject of history, right? And I didn't even know why, maybe just for like my own sense of self-efficacy, but sensationalizing the shit out of stuff. You know, and bringing, this was like when YouTube was new. So I'm bringing in, like, you know, was the moon landing faked type videos. And I said, you know, I probably didn't do those kids any favors, but maybe the goal there was just to, like, turn a light on or open a door or something. So now I'm thinking, like, I'd like to be more sophisticated in how I put this message out there. But I also need to balance that with putting this message out there in a way that people are going to remember that it happened. And that is like kind of a tightrope sometimes. So I'd like to hear what both of you would have to say about that.
Okay. You are outlining a conundrum that I think is, I'm glad you brought that up. That's something I think about all the time. My personal advice on this, or not advice, but my personal statement on this, is that I avoid these pitfalls and these concerns by just not adopting any isms at all. Like, I just don't subscribe to any isms. I don't subscribe to libertarianism. I'm not into anarcho-capitalism. I'm not in, you know, like, I don't need to take somebody else's written down ideology and make it my ideology. I can instead frame things from a personal point of view, existing within the reality that we live in.
And let me add one more layer of complexity to this before you go on, and then you can respond to this too. What I described was very much a kind of sales process where I'm trying to sell people on the idea this is important, and admittedly, the idea that we have a brand that's trying to do something important with it, right?
Yes.
That's a fact. That's unavoidable. That's what I do. But in that process, because it is, you know, sales, who am I talking to? Who's my target audience, right? And then how do I, without being deceptive or without zooming way in on one thing while completely hiding something else in the shadows in this scene that I'm making, how do I tailor a message that's going to best resonate with that group of people? So that's part of the consideration too. I'm sorry,
sure,
go on.
Sure, no, I think those are all great considerations, and because you're always going to get somebody that's going to come on your Twitter feed or in your email box and tell you you're doing ideology wrong, or you don't think correctly, you're not in line with my level of thinking. And the way I was getting to there is that the way I try to avoid that is, well, first of all, I hate marketing in general. I it's like my biggest problem with the work that I do, with the music that I release and other things, is because all of that saps energy from the creative aspect of what I'm trying to create.
I get
put
it
out there,
yep.
in a major, major way. And you can outsource that to other people, but then you're going to get somebody else's vision of your vision, you know, second or third hand. And so that's very difficult. It's something I struggle with all the time. It's something I try to avoid. I just hear Bill Hicks just in my head back here, just yelling and screaming, you know? And I think that these same things, you know, can be viewed, you know, inside and outside of academia. If we were to have these conversations with people that are highly, highly educated, nominal or normal terms, you're going to get people that are telling you that you are describing this ism wrong, or this ism wrong, or this ism wrong. And what I try to do is to relate things to somebody that has an objective mind, relate things to somebody that is a free thinker, that is not coming into something with a predisposed ideology to say that, oh, the whole Protestant Reformation is a conspiracy, or the Council of Nicaea is a conspiracy,
right?
And like whatever it is, you know. And I try to appeal to the people that are taking stock of the reality and the inventory that we can take as our own autonomous human beings. Because for most of history, until the American Revolution, where a lot of the classical learning and the great books were kind of thrown off, and Latin was disposed of and Greek was disposed of because they were trying to create a new reality. Now, that's not to say that it was in a universal sense, but the larger framing was basically like the United States was a whole new planet. You know, like we've just arrived on a whole new planet. Okay, we all come out of vaginas. What's going on here? Like, we're just alive. We're like, we got to like start over taking stock. You know what I'm saying? Like, you just got to start over. Like, is this a tree? Well, I've said this a lot of times and I go back to it because I think it's the crux of all of these argumentations and people to get so down the road in ideological purity on both sides. Like, I get attacked by anarcho-capitalists. I get attacked by hyper-nationalists. I get attacked by monarchists, you know, like, why aren't you like me? Or why aren't you like Larkin Rose? Or, you know, yeah. Like, and then Larkin Rose will come on there and be like, oh, well, let me psychoanalyze a guy I've never met. And he did that to me. Well, yeah. Because one guy did that to me. And then dude never talked to me in my life. You know what I'm saying? But like, people have their pet projects and their pet goals, and they have a money stream that goes with it. I'm not saying that about him. I'm just saying in general. And so there are these other motivations that you have to take into it. And that's what I loved about John Taylor Gatto. Because John Taylor Gatto, like, you could have a conversation one day about like how like, well, maybe Jimmy Carter wasn't the worst of the trilateral people because he kind of got duped by these other dudes. And then you could present some other information to him the very next day. And he'd be like, wow, that changes a lot of things. Can you write a paper on that? I've got somebody that'll pay you to put that out to some people, you know, like that's the kind of emails that we would, you know, exchange. And so like my biggest thing is like, oh yeah, it's very hard. I'm not going around saying I'm some objectivist. This is not an Ayn Rand conversation. This is just me saying that like, we have to take stock of the reality that we live in and realize that logic exists within systems. And to do a little parallel to Mr. Mortimer Adler and the great books of the Western world, when he was learning about the great books tradition and how like there were only like a couple different ways that this was being maintained in the United States, one of which was a professor at Columbia University named by the name of John Erskine. Mortimer Adler was a student of his, and he had a Jesuit priest come in and he was doing a talk on logic, and Mortimer Adler had his mind blown because he had thought that logic was this static thing that like was just everybody had to adhere to this one logic. You know, like, you know, you were either illogical or you were not logical. And what he realized is that logic exists within metaphysical systems. Logic exists within parameters. Like, so you're creating systems of logic and thinking, and depending on what your adherence is to or what factors you bring in to consider, you're going to change the overall outcome of it. You know, and so like he had his mind blown. He went on to create the great books of the Western world with Scott Buchanan, thought he'd discovered the trivium, left out all the African-Americans he could think of, said they wrote no good books, and created his own little metaphysical, you know, metalogical construct is what I meant. Metalogical, not metaphysical. Metalogical construct. It's just that logic exists within systems. And so I avoid that pitfall or that concern by just not marketing to anybody. What I'm here to do is to tell my vision of or my view of the actual inventory. Like we've started a project here. Let's take inventory of the terrain. You know, I don't have any ideological purity test about, you know, Social Security. In fact, if you try to take my parents after this has already taken place, then we're going to have some problems. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I'm not the dude who's going to be like, we need to take everybody off Social Security, kick everybody off welfare because it was created by some utopious conspiracy and blah, 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 blah. But those people exist and they are dominating these conversations on a regular basis. They blow up my emails because I've signed up for their subscription stuff and I can't get rid of them. It's just one after another of people that are trying to sell their own utopian vision. I mean, I'm sorry. If you want to have a conversation about ideology and about ideals, I can agree with you on anarcho-capitalism or anarcho-syndicalism on a lot of different things. The idea that that's ever going to happen, that's just as utopian as Robert Owen.
Well,
and
yeah.
we need to stop pretending that this is a actual thing that's going to take place. And we need to stop like attacking people for being rational enough to point out the inconsistencies and the cartoonish logic that is inherent in most of this thinking, because that's just how I view it. I'm going to get a lot of heat for that, but I don't care because, like I said, no isms. I'm my own person. I'm taking objective stock of the reality that we live in. If you told me right now that if you told me, and now you could have this conversation with most people, and I know this is a tangent, but you can't have this conversation without the underlying ideological factors being discussed. So if you could tell me right now, 100%, let's say Ron Paul came to me and said, you know, let's just throw him in here. We can take all of the, or Ron Paul and Dennis Kucinich or somebody. You could take all of the money that's being used right now on military that I disagree with that being used. My tax money being taken against my will to murder other human beings around the world. Totally against that. There's not a lot of fight going on. People aren't standing up and fighting for that because it's not spelled out to them. They don't look at it in that terms. But I think most rational people, if you told them like, hey, what if I could prove to you that we're taking all the millions that they just approved in the military budget and give poor people an access to healthcare? You know, like you're going to get some people that are like, no, no, not on my watch, you know, but you're going to get other people that are going to be like, well, I know a lot of people in my life that have died because they don't have access to healthcare. Like there are practical realities that we exist in that nullify this ideological Puritanism. And that's what it is. It's the same Puritanism that was just discussed in these religious thinking that's being overcast over these other ideologies. And, and everybody's got their Pittsburgh Steelers yellow and black voluntarist flag, and they think that's going to change something. But like, I live in the Midwest. I know people that think Trump was put there by God, you know, like for real. No, I'm not kidding. Like they think he's there because God told him to. Like they basically didn't even watch The Family on Netflix, which describes that whole, you know, how they created wedge issues and how they use Trump as a vessel and all these different things. These people don't even need that. They just go to the mega church. They get, you know, like a mishmash of Mark Levine and Rush Limbaugh, and they go home and they spout that shit to other people. I'm sorry to, you know.
No. But this is such a great tie-in to what we were talking about last show with transcendentalism. It's like I've watched people in various forms, in various places, and I've been part of these communities who actually say, no, we need to break away, right? Because of the larger society that you're talking about and the infeasibility of these ideas in that society. And I had to go from, you know, starting this project at the height of the Ron Paul revolution, 2008, 2009, to saying, okay, how can I maximize freedom in my own life? And how can I, be a good guide for other people who are interested in doing that? That's an entirely different scale. And that's a huge adjustment. And so if I had to pick an ideology, I'm not backing away from this one. But what I've been through, like, not like it's been hard. It's been a wonderful journey over the last 12 years. But to see these ideas continuously tested against reality, just remembering like how relieved I was to hear like Stefan Molyneux say, well, this is 1,000 years away. OK, well, great. That's kick that can, you know, when you just saw how implausible it looked in the actual world. But it didn't mean the conversation couldn't happen, and it didn't mean that people couldn't practice it and become models for it in their own lives. And absolutely, I think we agree with that. But a lot of people in the online conversation are like, when you bring up some kind of an idea and they say, OK, well, either I need to be able to cram this into my existing ideology, or not cram, like move it in nice and easily to my existing ideology, or you're somebody that I'm going to attack, not constructive. So I agree. We might be in different places ideologically, but I completely agree with what you're saying. And I think just to move all the way back to messaging, I've always had a real aversion to marketing too. And I'm hoping like young Danny can get some good advice or some good lessons from us on this here as he tries to do it for himself. But, you know, what was really influential for me was, or at least it changed my thinking and like made me say, okay, what's possible? Instead of just resigning myself to not doing it, what's possible was actually this famous email marketing guy named Ben Settle, who my friend Nathan Frazier, who I really look up to as far as like a lot of this stuff is concerned. You know, he turned me on to this guy, Ben Settle. I started listening to him. He said, if you have something valuable to share, it behooves you to see it as an obligation, right? To get, like, you have an obligation. If you have something valuable to share, you have an obligation to figure out how to share it, you know? And that was actually a bit of a turning point for me. I'm still not great at it. I'm still not doing all of the things that I just see as completely arduous, right? Or, I don't know, I don't want to say, like, out of integrity, but certainly, like, there's a lot of friction in doing these things. I'm not exactly sure where it all comes from, but I get what you're saying and all of that. So, Danny, you've been listening. Anything that you want to add or modify?
Well, yeah, I think I totally agree with what Kevin said about just simply not subscribing to any camp. Not, you know, I don't have any badges. I'm not a card carrying anything, and I don't see myself becoming such. Because it's fundamentally limiting when you subscribe to an ideology, because not only do you suddenly become almost religiously obligated to toe the party line, I think you also, it kind of, what comes with that is the otherizing of everybody else. And I know you've talked a lot about this on your show, Brett, how, like, when you first got into libertarianism, you know, like, so it became this thing for you to show, like, oh, well, I know the truth that nobody else knows. And so you could go out and broadcast that. And in a lot of ways, that doesn't even really help your cause, because then people are like, oh, well, don't talk to that guy. But also, it cuts you off from maybe your new viewpoint that you have been utterly convinced of. Maybe it is lacking in certain areas. And so to avoid that, you can just not take a team and just be an individual. And I hate to say cherry pick different philosophies or ethics, but that's kind of is something that I toss around in my head every now and then, like, because there are going to be elements of you know, Catholicism that I'm like, okay, yeah, I could see that as a thought structure. I could see that. I could get down with that. And then there are elements, of course, that I don't like at all. And I could see that with pretty much any thought system, because we're humans. And I think that to say that we've constructed any totally correct ideology, be you a socialist or a libertarian or whatever, is ludicrous and utopian. And Kevin, you also mentioned how it's not just people who believe in, like, some sort of state system that are utopians. There are plenty of anarchists who are very, very utopian in their rhetoric and in their thinking. And I'm just as worried about those people as I am about, well, maybe not just as, because this, you know, state utopias have tended to be a lot bloodier because they've got the resources and the reach, but just purely philosophically, I am no more in favor of an anarcho-capitalist utopian vision where we could just obliterate the social welfare state. So everything will be great now. The market will clean it all up. It's like, I don't buy that. That seems like such a pipe dream to me. So the one thing I would add is that I have the benefit of being 25. And so most of my life has been spent as a child. And so frankly, I don't deserve to have an ideology yet anyway. You know, like, who the hell am I? And who the hell are people my age who are already, like, devout, you know, young conservatives or liberals or socialists? It's like, what makes you think you get to be any of those things yet? Like, you've hardly even lived. You've been being raised for most of your life, and now suddenly you're an expert on how the world should be run. And I think that how this ties into my utopian focus is that I think a lot of people, they adopt political values and ideologies in their teen years when they really don't deserve to have political opinions yet. And they just keep those all the way through their lives. And it's like, okay, you never really got that shaken up. Like, you're just still holding on to something that you decided on when you were essentially a kid who hadn't really worked a real job and hadn't had any catastrophic relationships fall apart or intimate relationships. You don't pay your own bills, et cetera, et cetera. You just hold on to these little, there's a Louis C.K. bit. Am I going to get in trouble for bringing up Louis? There's a Louis C.K. bit from years ago where he talks about his beliefs. And he's like, beliefs are just things that I have. Like, I don't do anything with them, but I believe in something. And it's nice to keep in my head. But it's not real. It's not really anything tangible. And I think that that's how, like, politics is for a lot of people, where, you know, you get to have your little political viewpoint. Maybe you even get to vote every few years. But are you living, is your political viewpoint commensurate with all levels of your behavior? Like, are you a socialist from top to bottom? Like, is it in your bones? Is it in the way you behave? Like, in the French Revolution, we talked about Robespierre and how he was a committed Democrat, like small d Democrat, in that when the committee was voting on whether or not to go to war with Prussia, he was against it. He thought it was a bad idea, said nobody likes armed missionaries, but they voted to go to war. And then he was like, all right, well, the people have spoken and I am now pro-war. So it's like, that's a guy who is ideologically committed to his political beliefs from top to bottom. And are most people like that? I don't think so. I think there's a lot of talking about, you know, oh, here's the way society should be. Here's the way society should be. But most people are just not, I don't really think they're living in a way that is consistent with that. So on the one hand, you've got a very limiting totalitarian ideology that you're not allowed to rhetorically deviate from, you know, and that, you know, Kevin, you're saying you get attacked by all different camps. It's like, okay, that's great. You've got it all worked out in your head, but are you living in a way that actually furthers your ideology, or are you just using it as a bat to beat people with? And unfortunately, I see more of the rhetorical bat and less of the productive activity that could be taking place. And then, of course, when we do see it take place, it winds up like these utopian systems that we've been exploring, where, you know, we've got it all figured out. We know how society should be run. And I think the problem is when there are only a small number of people who are actually concerned with living in a way that's consistent with their ideology, they maybe neglect the fact that most people are not ideological robots. Most people just want to eat and be with their family and have fun and whatever else. They're not really all that interested in like being a dutiful member of any political party.
Nothing to deride anyone for either. You know, I mean, that was kind of the realization that I came to. Like, how many different groups of people call other groups of people sheep? Right?
Right.
And, and it's just like, okay, well, I had a life that worked out where I could make these things priorities. And then I got older and realized how rare that was to be able to think about these things on the level that I have. And I just want to add to something that you said, you know, when you talk about somebody being ideological from head to toe in that their deeds match their words, I think there is a more dangerous version of that today where people's personalities or their senses of themselves is very wrapped up in their ideology. Now, I learned this from looking in the mirror because for 10 years, I've been a fairly public person with a personality that is very much intertwined with an ideology, right? So if I came onto my show next Monday, a couple days from now, and I said, you know what, I'm voting for Bernie, there'd be lots of problems. There'd be lots of problems. So I understand, like, having lived that and like, you know, tried to self-reflect about that, that when I see that happening today, mostly with millennials and like, you know, progressivism or socialism or social justice, the very sense that I'm a good person, and I'm, you know, quoting them in this case, but I felt this way as well, is very much connected to what they are signaling. Right? The world is their mirror and they signal into this world. And that's also why these echo chamber walls have been built up so high, because people are doing mirror, mirror on the wall. That's why we see, whether we're talking about libertarians or conservatives or progressives, meltdowns, right? There is no group. Some groups might be more prone to these meltdowns than others, but no group is immune to melting down when that mirror breaks.
Yes.
So,
yes.
That's an important feature of this, why this seems to be getting worse today, too, is that there is more wrapping up personality with ideology.
And that can be a very dangerous thing, obviously.
I hope you enjoyed that, everybody. You can go to schoolsucksproject.com/AV to see all of our support options. That includes Patreon, the AV Club, Subscribestar. And, you know, if you're looking at coinmarketcap.com and you're going, holy shit, I'm rich. Can I do anything for School Sucks with this? Yeah, we'll set up a yearly, two-year, a lifetime subscription. Just shoot me an email with subscription in the subject line. We'll figure it out. So again, schoolsucksproject.com/AV. If you appreciate and get value from all the free work we do, please help us out. It's really important right now. Thanks for listening and take care.